Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Arturis Karnisovas is a leading candidate in the sense that he's a finalist, but he hasn't interviewed yet. So I don't know how you can call him a leading candidate when he hasn't interviewed yet. That's all I would say. Unless there was an interview yesterday that I'm not privy to. So I should also say that. I think job interviews are important. I do think that he's been on that radar a long time. I think he was one of the four first that was on the original list of four, and that Justin Zanuck was not. So you can read into that what you want. But I'm going to wait and see how the interview goes before I call him a leading candidate. I mean, he's a very attractive candidate. He's been on their list for a long time.
Casey Johnson on the Mully and Haw Show on Sports Radio 70 The Score earlier this morning. He from NBC Sports Chicago talking about Arturis Karnisovas. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working through the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare. Thank you for helping keep us safe. Kendra Andrews covers the Denver Nuggets for The Athletic in Denver. She's on Twitter at Kendra_Andrews. And she is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you holding up, Kendra?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. For the most part, okay. So yesterday we talked about one of the candidates and got all the information from the boots on the ground in Salt Lake City regarding Justin Zanuck, who seems to be, as a nominal general manager, much more of a contract side guy, sort of a relationship guy, more of from the agent's background. Not the same with Arturis Karnisovas, the former terrific player, also a general manager, but he seems more basketball-y. He seems like he's the guy in the gym. He's much more scouting side. Is that fair?
I think so. You know, the thing with Arturis is that him and Tim Connolly, who's the Nuggets president of basketball operations, they're kind of this dynamic duo for the Nuggets when it comes to just the whole, everything that general managing includes. And so I think they kind of divide and conquer. And yeah, I think Arturis is much more of a behind the scenes kind of guy. He works in the background while Tim Connolly is more of the face of general managing for this franchise.
Do you think Karnisovas has that in him, though? I mean, it's a pretty charismatic, dynamic guy, if I remember correctly. And I guess I remember he was a terrific player at Seton Hall. A little surprised that he didn't end up in the NBA, and he probably proved with his European success that he probably should have been. But does he have it in him to be the forward-facing, to be the face and voice of an organization from the very top?
I mean, I think that would definitely, if he did get this job in Chicago, that would be the biggest adjustment for him. I mean, I think he has the personality for it, and I think he's a charismatic guy who probably could. It's just not something that they've asked him to do here in Denver. And so I think it would definitely be the adjustment of, you know, he would be the one getting the criticism if a mistake was made or if people thought a mistake was made. He would be the one who has to answer all the questions. So I think it would definitely be a change for him, but I think he does have the personality to do it.
How involved is he in the day-to-day operation of being on the phone with agents, of being liaison between the basketball and upper management, ownership, et cetera. You know, what does he do on a given day? Is he out scouting? I mean, is he away from the building? Is he looking at other teams or prospects? Like, when you say they divide and conquer, what is the actual work day for him?
Right. Well, I think when I say divide and conquer, I think that Arturis is a very organized guy. He has his X's and his O's. He's going to get this done. And I think Tim Connelly is more of the creative guy. I think both of them definitely scout. I cannot tell you how many times I've texted Tim Connelly and he's, sorry, I'm out scouting. That being said, Arturis, I think he has a huge advantage, especially with international scouting. You know, he's from Lithuania. He spent time with the Lithuanian national team. He played overseas. He played in the Olympics. He has so many ties to the international basketball community that he is definitely the one who spearheads that. I mean, he is the reason why Nikola Jokic is on the Nuggets. As for negotiating contracts with agents, I mean, he was played a huge part in Jamal Murray re-signing with his max contract last summer. I think he's definitely in and out of the building. I think that he does play a big role in scouting and negotiations and talking with upper management of the team. I just think when I say divide and conquer, it's their styles of how they get things done, which is a little bit different, and they balance each other out.
Did he have to make the case for Jokic? I wonder about that story, because there are plenty of scouts that would watch Jokic run down the floor and be like, yeah, nope, not an NBA player, not an NBA athlete. And it takes a while to appreciate what he's so marvelous at doing, despite not being able to jump over a bagel.
I've never heard that term, but I like that. I mean, I don't know if you had to convince him, but I do know that he flew out to see Nikola when Nikola wasn't even, you know, who he is today as a player, and said, just keep at it, keep working, and there will be a spot for you. I mean, I can imagine, though, that, yeah, he probably had to pitch the idea a little bit to the owners and to everyone else within the organization, saying, just wait, I think that this kid can actually become something great.
Do you know what he would value in a coach?
That's a good question. You know, I think working with Michael Malone. Michael Malone is a very, I don't want to say autonomous guy, but he knows what his plan is and he kind of goes after that. I don't know, though, if I can fully answer that question, though.
I like Mike Malone. That's one of the things that is in common with these two candidates for the Bulls job in Zanuck and Karnišević, is both of those respective coaches, Quinn Snyder and Mike Malone, are also kind of coaches, very thorough, very well respected, and prepared for everything, which would be a real change of pace here in Chicago because of what we've been going through for the past time with somebody who's just seemingly so completely overwhelmed by everything. What kind of practices do they run? Are these longer and more thorough practices, or is it sort of the work smarter, not longer kind of thing? Give the guys the information that they need and just expect them to digest a lot of it on their own?
I would definitely say the smarter, not harder. The Nuggets haven't been hosting many practices this season. They started out at the beginning of the season hosting more, but as it went on, they have it. And I think their philosophy with that is just, we don't want to overwork you and run you down. But they have spent, I know while they haven't been practicing, they've been doing film studies and breaking it down and talking. So I think it's exactly what you said. It's okay, we're going to show you what you're either doing wrong, what you're doing right, what the other teams are doing, maybe a little bit of practice, nothing too strenuous. They don't really shoot around a lot. And then it's up to you. You need to be able to digest it and to put something out there on the court.
You mentioned that Karnišević has overseas connections, obviously, because of his deep experience playing in as long as he played and as well as he played. What are his connections like on this side of the pond? And do you think that he would be able to move quickly and confidently to assemble a representative staff of people that he already trusts to do these jobs that he has envisioned? I'm sure that's going to be part of the interview process.
Mm-hmm. The thing with Arturas is he's just garnered so much respect across just basketball in general, whether that is overseas or here in the States. I think that people have seen what he has been able to do. I mean, he was a really big part of this Denver Nuggets core group, drafting that young core group and building them up. And I think that he just has gotten so much respect throughout the league that people recognize him as a really good general manager and as an elite general manager and someone in the league who can get the job done. He can, you know, see talent when it's still developing. You obviously see that with Nikola Jokic. I think you can even see that with Jamal Murray and signing his contract of, you know, we don't necessarily expect you to just be this insane guy next season, but we're investing in you for these next 4 years, because in 4 years, we know that that is who you're going to be. And I think that people recognize that in Arturas, and that has made him, you know, this Bulls job isn't the first offer that he's gotten while he's been here in Denver. People around the league recognize, you know, who he is and what he can do.
We are talking with Kendra Andrews of The Athletic Denver, who covers the Denver Nuggets. That's the team for which Arturas Karnishevas works at the moment. You mentioned the number of times that you text Tim Connelly. Do you also get to text Karnishevas? Does he share his number? Does he communicate like that? Because I think the openness of personality is something that is of interest to Bulls fans. You know, how much sunlight is there? How much transparency is there? How willing is he to talk? Some people who are doing scouting, who are traveling around, are a lot more active and less likely to be open about where they are and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't have his number, but I believe that other people on the beat do. And he's a guy that before any home game and even some road game when he travels with the team, he is there courtside during warmups. He's chatting away with writers. If there's scouts there, he will talk with them. If there's some other, you know, member of the other team's front office there, he will talk to them. So he's definitely a social guy. He does put himself out there and is, you know, will have conversations with you and kind of just have casual conversations with you. But I do think he's definitely quieter and reserved out of the two between himself and Tim Connelly, but he still puts himself out there and is a relatively social guy.
I also wonder, with being a former player, what that would do to relationships and proximity to the locker room, because sometimes they want sort of a hard wall there where a coach says, look, the locker room is mine and I don't need you in and around there because this is my relationship with the players. I'm the authority figure down there. And other teams maybe run it a little differently, and they'll see execs pop in every once in a while. And I know sometimes the allure of the locker room is more of a magnet for a former player because they feel more comfortable there. And I don't know what his dynamic would be, what that interactive dynamic would be with whoever he would hire as a coach.
Yeah. He definitely goes in and out of the locker room. I don't think Michael Malone has drawn, you know, strict lines of this is my area, that's your area. Michael Malone is very much the type of, when it comes to all that negotiating and all of those contracts, that is the front office. He's not touching that. But in terms of just, you know, camaraderie within the locker room, within this group of guys, I think that Malone has a philosophy of we are all part of this same team and we all want to get along and what's best for each other. So if you want to come in and hang out with the players and talk with the players, he's not going to stop that.
Kendra, one thing that we've learned as the Bulls have process is their first two choices, being Bobby Webster in Toronto and Adam Simon in Miami, were able to rework their contracts and stay where they were because of the interest, and teams really didn't want to lose them. How supportive are the Nuggets of him in his pursuit of a job like this? And what does it say if they about him if unlike some of these others, they do allow him to go. You know, I always think about things like that. About if he's so good, why would they say no? You're not getting this guy. We're keeping him no matter what.
Right. I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think the Nuggets would understand him wanting to have, you know, that full front office position like he would be getting if he went to Chicago. He's obviously proved to them how good he is. And I think that there's a push and pull. Like you said, there's a pull of no, we want you here because you're so good. We want to keep you for ourselves. But the Nuggets also have this philosophy of we want you to thrive as much as you can. And we saw that with guys like Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez. Yes, that's player side, but when they got traded to Minnesota, it was, you guys are really good for our team, but you have so much more potential that you can show somewhere else. And so I think if Arturas, you know, goes forward with this, I think the Nuggets wouldn't hold him back, because they recognize that this would be taking a next step forward in his career. And I believe that they would respect that and understand that. But of course, as you mentioned, there is, you know, it would be a little disappointing for them, I believe, if he left, because those are big shoes to fill.
Kendra, really appreciate the scouting report. Thanks for taking the time.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
That is Kendra Andrews of The Athletic in Denver. So we've gotten some pretty complete sets of information here, files put together on both Justin Zanuck and Arturas Karnišovas, who are the two names. And maybe there's more. Maybe there's some that have not been publicized, some we don't know. Maybe there's ongoing continued back channel investigation of the possibility of finding some of these other names on the list. But for now, we deal with the ones we know. And when he is interviewed, we'll know the next stages of this Bulls' pursuit of their new basketball voice. It is time now to play Who Am I? So I'm going to give you some information. If you're just joining us, you're saying, yeah, what is this, Bernstein? What's going on? First of all, I'm Dan Bernstein, and I'm on 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, live and local on Sports Radio 670 The Score, talking with you about whatever is going on. And I always reiterate, if you just feel like talking, if you want to call and have some strong opinion about whatever topic, if you're, you know, Bob from wherever you are, you want to call in, obviously here for you at 312-644-6767. But never feel like you're bothering anybody if you just want to check in and say hey, because personal connection matters right now. So we do this thing called Who Am I? And it was inspired by just a little something we saw on Twitter that seemed like it's a whole lot of fun when you give the credentials of an athlete and then you figure out, based on what you know, who this person is. So I said, maybe we'll make one a little more accessible. And I'm going to ask you now, who am I? I am a Hall of Fame baseball player. I was a 5-time All-Star, a 2-time MVP, a 2-time World Series champ, and a 4-time league leader in home runs. My career slash line is as follows. I batted .313. I was on base .412 for my career, and I slugged .605. That adds up to an OPS of 1.017. Now, I'm going to give you my most statistically similar players, and it may seem odd, but there's a reason why somebody with these rate stats is comped to these career similarity scores. Going from 10 to the most similar at number 1 in order. My most similar statistical comps. Joey Votto, Hal Troski, Moises Alou, Prince Fielder, Ryan Braun, Dick Allen, Chuck Klein, Mo Vaughn, Albert Bell, and Johnny Mize. Because it would seem weird, right? Why would this guy, with these rate stats, .313, .412, .605... first of all, only have made 5 All-Star teams. There's an extenuating circumstance here. And we are going to get to that. So I want you to think of who this is, and we will reveal the answer to Who Am I in just a moment. I'm Dan Bernstein, and you have The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Dan Bernstein asks, who am I?
Harris kind, I don't know. Brown.
Oh, he's tall.
Yeah. He's kind of tall, sort of tall. And he's like always wearing
t-shirts.
Yeah.
Who am I?
So he's sort of tall.
Kind of.
With hair.
Yeah.
And he wears t-shirts sometimes.
Yes.
On 670 The Score.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working through the COVID-19 pandemic, including grocery store employees, restaurant staffs, and delivery drivers. Appreciate you. So here's what I laid out for you before we went to break for our edition of Who Am I Today. I'm a Hall of Fame baseball player, a five-time All-Star, two-time MVP, two-time World Series champ, a four-time league leader in home runs with a career slash line of a remarkable 313, 412, and 605. The comps seem a little because you'd think that with these kind of numbers, the comps would be different, but the counting stats mean something here. The comps being Votto, Trotsky, Alou, Fielder, Braun, Allen, Klein, Vaughn, Bell, and Mize, maybe Albert Bell. And the reason is because I spent more time than any other MLB player in military service to my country during World War II. I missed all of the 1942, 43, and 44 seasons, having served a total of 47 months in what was then called the Army Air Forces, honorably discharged in 1945 as a captain, and then resuming my career to lead the American League in home runs for the Detroit Tigers after returning to action in 1946, with 44 home runs to lead all of baseball and a league-leading 127 runs driven in. Happy Passover, everybody. I am Hank Greenberg, born Hyman Greenberg, January 1st, 1911, in Greenwich Village, New York City. But the fact that he missed three full seasons and served 47 months in the Army Air Forces, only to come back and continue to play at a remarkably high level, also known for being an important conduit to Jackie Robinson and for being one of the few who reached out as strongly as he did in publicly welcoming an African-American player to the major leagues in 1947. But I thought I would grab that in honor of this being the first day of Passover.
Now, by the way, happy Passover to Al, and for all of our Jewish friends, we know this is the start of Passover.
Thank you. That's it. You can't start Passover. They have changed it. They've actually gone back into the Old Testament, and they have retroactively put it in there that you're not allowed to tell the story of the Book of Exodus until Ed Farmer has given the okay, until he's given
Crusaders
the
Crusaders will start tonight, and be safe when you drive home from wherever you're spending that Seder.
Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a drive. I don't know how I'm going to manage the drive home tonight. I've got to, like, walk all the way upstairs after this. So this is going to be different. Frank from Oak Park is calling. Always like to say hi to Frank on the Score. What's going on, man?
Hey, Bernsie. I listened to you talking about this Foles versus Trubisky thing, and I had a really active discussion with a season ticket holder who thought somehow the Bears were going to unveil like a running game like Frisco, and he would be the natural trigger man. So I had to like convince him of something else with that. But I think the fulcrum on this is the offensive line. Because for the last couple of years, I've sort of operated on the assumption that the Bears' offensive line, at least the pass blocking, I mean, we knew how bad the run blocking was a lot worse than the base stats would indicate. That's because Mitch is a very escapable QB. For background, he ran a 4.6 flat at the combine. That means he's as fast in a straight line as the league's faster tight ends, and he's as fast as the league's slower possession receivers, and he's probably faster than 85 or 90% of the defensive front seven dudes trying to clock him on any play. And with that speed, front sevens have to be less aggressive. They can't rush as deep, less Mitch run up inside for a 20 or 30 yard run. And the ends lanes need to be wider than for a less mobile QB, because if Mitch gets outside, he still has the run option. And with that extra time, there's a good chance that a wide out will get open for a double move. And you know, so that's another thing. So against a less mobile QB like Foles, he was timed in a 5.14 in the 40 at the combine. Therefore, the defensives can be more aggressive when they try to dismantle him. Hopefully he's better at getting the ball to outlet receivers if things go bad, and I would guess he should be better at blitz recognition before the snap and audibling to a new player, changing the hot rate if needed. So that should help some. But if the left tackle and the right guard both put pitch lookout blocks on the same play, Foles' mental powers aren't going to be able to save him. He's not Uri Geller or Kreskin or one of the mutants in Scanners. He can't put up a force field to stop these guys, okay? And Foles kind of reminds me, style-wise, of Jim Miller. Miller, I mean, he's achieved a lot more than Miller, but Miller was always the best choice for the Bears at QB when healthy, but you had to have old noodle arm Shane Matthews on the bench for those inevitable few games when Jim got racked up. Short form, neither of these guys have shown they can get through 16 games in one piece. And if the Bears' O-line is only marginally better than last year, both of them are going to have to start and win games for the Bears to go 9-7 or 10-6 and prevent, like, mass firings up there.
Thanks, as always, Frank. I see timing. That from what I understand about the Nagy offense is that the pressure on the offensive line is removed by the ball being out when it's supposed to be out and where it's supposed to be out. There is a place, there is a lane, there is a read that they get pre-snap and immediately post-snap. The whole idea, the whole concept of the offense is to not have these guys having to hold their pass blocks all that long. And that was one of the issues in Trubisky's processing speed, that because it took him longer, they ended up being asked to do more. So I do think that if the offense is being run properly, the offensive line may not be great, but they're each individual has an easier job, provided they can get the proper protections called out. And that again, that's also the quarterback's job. The quarterback's communication with the center: identify the mic, know what your protection is, know who the hots are, and that makes everybody look better. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I know that's the goal. I also said we wanted to get to this. You want to hear from an idiot? I'm going to bring you the rantings of an absolute, complete idiot. I know we've had our fun with him, and he can be sort of a fun character, but it stops being fun when it starts being dangerous. and Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy was on a teleconference just veering into the absurd and dangerous.
We need to get back to playing football for a variety of reasons if the medical people say we can. We don't need to let 1 or 2 months take that away from us. There's too many people that are relying on it.
We've got to have a plan, and so let's just stay on schedule. Everybody needs to relax, okay? And I'm not taking away from the danger of people getting sick. You have the virus. Stay healthy. Try to do what we can to help people that are sick, and we're losing lives, which is just terrible. But then the second part of it is that we still have to schedule and continue to move forward as life goes on and do everything we can to help those people. And I'm thinking in 3 or 4 weeks we could have the test ready available for people that aren't sick based on, can we test the employees, the 100 people that work in our building, and we can swab them and clear them to come into the building and get back to work. Once we've done that, I'm looking to start testing the players and bring them back. How fast that can happen based on the tests that are available, I can't say right now, but that's the plan. Okay, we have to have a plan, and the plan right now is for that to start on May 1st. It might get backed up 2 weeks. I don't know. I can't make that call. Football pulls about $36 million in television revenue. I think basketball pulls $4 million during the tournament. I don't know for sure. I think it's real close. So when you're talking about continuing the economy in this state, if you have to play, plus you need to play anyway. Everybody needs to see football. Even if you just watch it on TV, it's going to make people feel better. Okay, but again, medical people say it's okay based on the situation we're in. We have remedies. We have more testing available. You're talking about making $36 million. So the people that work in this building and work over the other side of the football stadium in Gallagher in the athletic department, they're in a separate entity from the university. So we're trying to find a way to pay everybody's salary and keep the economy going, because if you're paying salaries and people are working, then you're keeping the economy going, and it gives us the best chance as a state to stay on our feet. So, yes, if you have to play with zero people, which I don't think is going to happen, yes, you play.
Wow. Now, this is a classic case of a football coach who's used to being in control, not understanding that he's not in control and he doesn't know how to deal with it. This guy's such a chud, I don't even know where to start. And I don't want to steal this without attribution, because this is a great comment from our guy from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who's been a frequent guest on these airwaves, Jim Suhan, talking about the baseball plan that we were ripping yesterday for being ridiculous. And here's what he said, and I want Mike Gundy to hear this. COVID-19 isn't just a disease, it's an intelligence test. If baseball tries its plan, its entire management would get a failing grade. And he's talking about how quickly sports think they can control this, that they think that they can come back and do this when they want, just because they can try to cherry pick whatever medical evidence or advice is out there from doctors. He says it isn't just a disease, it's an intelligence test. And this is one, holding it to the Suhan standard right here, that Mike Gundy is absolutely failing and failing miserably. Not to mention he outed himself as a complete racist by referring to it as a Chinese virus. And if he doesn't think that on his campus, that on the Oklahoma State campus, that there aren't Asian students and Asian American students that are going to be insulted by this, he's got to understand that he works for a public university. And the good news is that the university issued a statement immediately after Gundy said all this ridiculous, the insane rambling of a football coach who simply does not know what he's talking about. Thankfully, Oklahoma State said, "We will adhere to the advice of public health experts who are making informed decisions in the best interests of the citizens of our nation and state based on sound scientific data. We will also abide by the federal and state mandates as well as Big 12 guidelines. We will not compromise the health and well-being of our campus community. This virus is deadly, and we will do our part from a state to help blunt the spread." This is after Gundy said he was interested in hearing more positive news about the pandemic. Well, guess what? You don't get to decide what kind of news you hear about a pandemic, and you don't get to control it. You know who's in charge? Not you, coach. This is a coach who can't deal with not being in charge. You are not in charge. A virus is in charge. It will decide. The doctors who went to medical school, who are trained to deal with these things to keep people safe, they will decide. Not you, coach. And it's going to make parents think, and should make any parent think, about what he's thinking about these kids in his care, about what he's willing to do, as if this virus cares about football. What a horrible guy this is. And yeah, I know it's always, it's fun in games, but when this guy, in the midst of this, shows his ass as a complete racist and says, well, my players, they can come back, we can do this. How about caring about the welfare of your players? How about caring about the welfare of your campus? And I'm glad that he got smacked down by that statement from the university. I'm glad that happened, because it should be, because there are things that aren't supposed to be said, and that is not, it's absolutely, if you want to, and now the fact that you've got to deal with players understanding that their coach is also a racist, have fun with that. Want to see the statement about that, too. Lawrence Holmes is going to join us next. We're going to do some old-fashioned transition in just a bit. I'm Dan Bernstein. You've got the score. Since we're not doing regular transitions in the way that we used to between shows, one thing we've been doing in the final segment of our show, which is 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, is we've been reaching out to bring in another score host to just kind of keep the conversation and the connection going. And today it's Lawrence Holmes who is with us. Lawrence, I don't know if you have a horse in this race for the Bulls' new, whatever the title is going to be, head of basketball, but I just want to make sure they're doing this right, and I hope they are. It's kind of tough to tell.
So far, I've been pleased with them, first of all, wanting to do it now. And I get that kind of matches what their timeline was originally, because it would be the end of the season for them. But I like the idea that if there is some sort of restart to the NBA season, and I'm starting to feel like that's not going to happen, but if there is, having this person be able to get their eyes on the roster as is, and not just looking at tape, being able to look at it live, theoretically, look at it live, I think there's some value. I do think that it's interesting, and Rob Schaefer from NBC Sports Chicago has been doing some really good writing on this. When you look at the way that this shook out, where some people withdrew their name and other people weren't allowed to talk, and it's in some cases makes the Bulls kind of look bad, but there seem to be mitigating circumstances in almost every one of those reasons why a candidate was no longer available. But I'm happy with it, as long as the person, I honestly don't even care, Dan, because I don't know if any of us know enough about the candidates to say, well, this person is a good choice or this person is a good choice. All I want is that person be empowered to do the job that needs to be done.
I laughed when I heard the way it was being reported yesterday that John Paxson would be willing to step aside. And I'm thinking, you don't get to say you're willing to step aside if someone is being hired who's in a position to tell you to leave the building. You simply leave the building no matter what your level of willingness may be. This thing just got so backwards so quickly, and that's, I think it tells you about where we are and what our assumptions are about the organization, that he wouldn't be allowed to be fired.
I'm okay with the way that kind of came out, though, just because it seemed as if, from what Casey and Cowley were reporting, it was more of a, look, if you want me to be an ambassador, I'm cool with it. If you want me to leave, I'm cool with it. Like, I have a lot of beef with Pax, but I'm not gonna get on him for this, because honestly, I think the guy probably needs to walk away from the Bulls. Like, he needs a vacation. But if he wants to fall back into the role of, I'm someone who was instrumental in the first three championships and you should remember me as the player and not the guy who's been in charge for 17 years, I'm good with that. I'm not going to beat him up for saying I'm willing to walk away. I just knowing how loyal the Reinsdorfs have been over the last few years to a myriad of people in both of their organizations, I get why he might feel it necessary to say publicly, or at least have it leak out publicly, that he would, if he is going to be pushed out, that he's okay. He would understand that he's being pushed out.
I guess that's the semantic, probably. That's the way of looking at it. It's just like, if my time is done, my time is done. It's so much like Bob Pulford to me. Everybody's looking for these analogies, Lawrence, and they had to get Pulford out of the building. They had to. The Wirtz has had another business where they transition him into retirement. The Reinsdorfs don't really have the benefit of that, but it mattered symbolically, it mattered operationally, that as long as Bob Pulford was around, there was going to be some of that. You know, I compared it to the mother dough, you know, the sourdough. As long as you have to completely change it out in there, you've got to get it out of the building. So until he's not there, he's there. You know what I mean?
Yes, I think that that's a reason for skepticism. Because if at the end of this, you have Michael and Jerry saying, well, we still really trust John. If you're someone who's a candidate for the job, I don't know that I would be comfortable if he was still lurking around 1901 West Madison. I don't know if I would be okay with having to wonder if my decisions on things are being second thought by someone who I technically replaced. And if that person does have the ear of ownership, it wouldn't feel like I had complete control. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, I'm with you on the level of skepticism that one should have when it comes to the Bulls, because as an organization, there are not a lot of things that they've done right over the last 10 years. So anyone who has that feeling of, look, I don't trust these dudes, and if these guys are still around, it's going to be the same old mess, you are justified. You as a Bulls fan are 100% justified in believing that. You're right. Like, it does seem like they need a sweeping out. Like, it needs to be cleaned. And maybe one of the only ways that outside of results, like in the immediate future of the Bulls, outside of results, what I think would turn Bulls fans back on, like re-engage them, would be a, as you say, like a cleaning out of what they've done over the last few years.
A lot of that's going to be the hiring of the coach, too, that when you see somebody who's competent and
oh, he got to go.
Intelligent.
Like he has to go.
Yeah, that's like,
I don't know how 100%. Anyone would ever look at that guy and go, you know what we need? More of Jim Boylan. There have got to be clearly more qualified or more interesting candidates than the guy who is currently manning the sidelines for the Bulls. And those are the things where you wonder if how serious are the Reinsdorfs in that regard. Like, don't fall on a sword for him. Don't be like, well, hey, maybe you should consider. No, I'll consider what I want to consider. You put me in charge, right? I'll consider what I want. And what I want is that guy gone. Like, there shouldn't be conditions like that on this job.
What I finally have come to realize, and I don't, this might be a bad thing rather than a good thing, but after hearing all we did about Justin Zanuck and his skill set yesterday, and then hearing what I heard today from Kendra Andrews talking about Arturis Karnišovas, I want both of them, because they have the perfect complementary styles. It's not possible to have both of them, and I know that no executive is going to be perfect except maybe Bobby Webster. With Zanuck, you get that former agent, cap guy, contracts, player relationship kind of thing. And then with Karnišovas, you get the former player, scouting eye, comfortable in a gym kind of thing. And, you know, they got to pick one or the other, it seems, because guys, you know, a guy like Webster gives you almost the best of all worlds in that regard of getting somebody who's truly designed to be at the top of an organization. You got to come from one side or the other sometimes, but I'd love to put those brains together and have that guy run my organization.
Yeah, when Karnišovas, is it Karnišovas or Karnišovas? Like, I have no idea, honestly. I'm going to find out today.
When he was a player, it was Karnišovas. Because, I mean, remember when he played us. He was a terrific Big East player at Seton Hall. So I just remember him. I remember watching him a lot as a player. He was really good. And should have played in the NBA because they didn't really understand the way the game was supposed to be played then, like the European teams did. I also think that that little serif on top of the S means you pronounce it with a sh sound,
sure.
like Sharunas, Marcellonas, that is a Lithuanian pronunciation. As far as I understand, that's what that particular means. It's a sh sound.
But he also apparently gives you the European scouting angle of it too. And I'm all for someone who's going to be better. And I understand that there are some arguments for the current Bulls hierarchy to say, well, you know, they have found some players. The problem is that when I look at the roster right now, I see a roster that isn't even a superstar away. Like, I don't feel like you could just drop a superstar, the superstar X, into the Bulls and be like, now there's a team that can compete for a championship. I think that there's still some roster building that has to go up, which is what was kind of intriguing about Bobby Webster to me. Like, the idea of looking at the Raptors and saying, here's how you build the nest. Here's the nest. And then what we needed was a superstar. And they had a star in DeRozan. They had one of the really good players in the league. Give us someone that can take that next step. But make sure that you have everything built around that and you're ready for that when the opportunity arises.
You know what? I'm rewinding even further, though, maybe further than you are, because what I want is the entirely new set of eyes to look at the roster and to figure everything out. Maybe we don't know how talented this roster is, that I'm willing to look at it optimistically and they can say, hey, Wendell Carter Jr., forget everything Jim Boylan ever told you. We're going to go back and look at tape from Duke, and we see things in here that mean you can be even better than you over the past couple of years maybe you thought you could be. Whether it's Daniel Gafford, whether it is Kobe White, or as long as Chris Dunn is around, you got to consider that possibility as well. There is talent here. There's talent, and maybe if Chandler Hutchison could stay healthy, if Shaquille Harrison could add to his offensive game, I'm going to throw out everything and say new eyes, new ears, new opinions on player development can take all these raw materials and say, you're a different player than you've been told you were. We see something different in all of these raw materials. So that's what's intriguing to me, is the number of traits, the number of skills, and the number of people who now know what they're doing in a different way, where they're not bothered by the past, they're not burdened by anybody else drafting them for any other reason, and they can look completely objectively and say, even though everybody saw you as this, we don't. We want you to be this. And then all bets are off.
That's growth plate.
That's why I do like the idea of this happening now, and that there's the possibility, if there is still a season to be had, of that person being able to really do the scouting and go, okay, even with it's a five game sample or a 10 game sample, that you're able to then go and look and be like, well, what's this person all about? What's this player all about? Because in the case of Lowry, you're talking about a player that I feel has taken not just a step backward, a severe step backward. And when you start looking at the statistics on him, yeah, the traits are still there, but you weren't getting the production even when he was seemingly healthy and the roster was also seemingly healthy.
Yeah, I know you're going to get into some of this more on your show, but I think that's part of my interview. If I'm Michael Reinsdorf, I'm making sure that either one of these guys has watched the tape already. I want to know, what do you think Kobe White is going to be? Is he a point guard? Is he a bench scorer? What is he? And I want to make sure that they've got informed opinions, having already watched tape from the moment they started preparing for that interview. And I hope that's part of it. Lawrence, thank you. Appreciate the time, and look forward to listening to your show.
Thank you.
That's Lawrence Holmes. He's coming up. We'll let him get all set up as we thank our guests, Lynn Bramer, Mike Florio, Kendra Andrews, and Lawrence. Thanks to the executioner, Ray Diaz. Thanks to Jay Zawoski, Shane Reardon, everyone else for helping out. Thanks for listening, and be well. Be smart, be safe, be socially distant, wash your hands, listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Have a healthy, happy, and peaceful first night of Passover as well. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow at 9.
By the way, happy Passover to Al and for all of our Jewish friends. We know this is the start of Passover.
Your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.